50-50 football, John Gibbons with Mo Stewart, Neil Atkinson and Las Vegas. But we're not going to miss him at all because we've got a fantastic show ahead of us.
I'm a bit disappointed you even mentioned it, Gibbons.
Not even worthy of mention. Yeah, a fantastic show. So we're pleased to get stuck into the action points of the Premier League from the weekend. And we'll get straight into it with Middlesbrough fan and author Daniel Gray. And it's been a funny week for Middlesbrough, Dan, because positives, but also a bit of frustration that a little bit too late.
Yeah, there's definitely that sense when you looked at the players on Sunday, just gave it absolutely everything. Yeah. Even if we were on the rack a lot, it was still, the commitment was there and the spirit of last season was there. So it was quite bittersweet in a way, sitting there thinking, what if? But on the other hand, if we, you know, we're down anyway, pretty much, and if we can show a bit of that for the last three, it carries you into the summer. And contrast that with really how sad and deflated Sunderland seem. And I mean that genuinely, because I'm not a big sort of person into my rivalries and things, then, you know, if we can keep playing like that and keep the crust, the core of the players, then there are chinks of light for the first time in a while, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Middlesbrough kind of showed a lot of what on Sunday, what I expected to be like this season. It was, you know, they were coming up against a good opposition. It has to be said, Man City showed plenty of quality, as they have a lot of times going forward this season. But Middlesbrough, defended mostly well and dug deep, and also just made it difficult for the opposition. Negredo was obviously a handful, but people getting in around him and obviously the crowd's a huge factor when it's like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, on Sunday I just remembered how loud the Riverside can be, and to be honest, our support has been great all year, but it's rarely got to that absolutely that atmosphere in which the ground's shaking, and you can see it really affecting the players. It was well built from that point of view, really, the way that the noise stays in like that. And as I say, there's that slight tinge of disappointment, because it was how I expected us to play as well, and getting really among the customers, absolutely all over, as he was last season, impossible to beat and to bring down. And the importance of having Chambers back was massive as well, and he's been good having him back, but again, he's probably going to go back to Arsenal and then probably go on loan to another Premier League newly promoted club next season, I imagine.
Yeah, what kind of lifestyle? I worry about these boys, probably overly. I just want them to enjoy the football.
I just want to be happy.
Well, at least he got his goal, and I mean, he got to celebrate his goal. And how do you think he's played for Middlesbrough this season? Because I mean, I don't know what you're expecting. A lot of time when lads come from the bigger clubs, they can be hit or miss.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect, really. I couldn't see beyond the hipster beard at first. solid at right back, but very good with Gibson at centre half. The two of them together have this lovely understanding that's been, when they've played together, you felt quite assured, really. And yeah, the celebration was brilliant. I was right in front of me and my dad, and you can to capture that moment of my dad looking like a 15-year-old going mental was a very special memory for the season, I think.
Kind of nice to have a few. You mentioned Gibson there, and obviously you mentioned earlier about keeping the core players together. If you do go down, and it's looking more and more likely, unfortunately, is he one who you think might be a bridge too far in terms of keeping, just because of the attention he's getting and the fact there's not a huge amount of quality English centre-halves about?
It's beginning to feel a bit inevitable. His own tone has changed a bit. He still talks about his love of the club, which is absolutely obvious. And he's played his heart out all year. But I imagine from a boringly financial point of view that there's enough for the right manager to rebuild with the amount of money you might get for an English centre-half, as you say. And no one would begrudge him it at all. But in dreamland, he stays, he's captain, it's his hometown club. He won't earn that much more anywhere else, and he takes us back up. That's what a 12-year-old kid told me would happen after the match on Sunday. So
it's a really tough one, though, for him, because I think partly his family connections means he's probably going to be more aware of the financial side than some of the other players would. So in terms of you could almost see him doing it like as a martyr, saying like, you know,
the fact that it worked for Newcastle as well, obviously they were able to build a squad to compete so well in the Championship based on sale of two players.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, him and there might be bids in for Traore, I imagine, and I think he excites fans of other teams more than it excites fans of the Middlesbrough. We've seen him run the ball out of play too many times, but he might get an assist one day.
He's a walking highlight reel.
Yes, he is. But the thing is, he came on Sunday and they really visibly panicked. I think because of this reputation, because of this sort of panic, because of his Opta statistics instead of actually seeing him. So you see one week, this week, the fact last week was that he'd completed more dribbles than Lionel Messi this season. And I thought, yeah, he has had an assist. He's also fallen over. He's fallen over at nearly all of it.
Messi's got the 40 goals to fall back on as well.
I know, exactly.
And define completed, by the way. I mean, how much does he have to do to get a completed
exactly.
dribble?
I really don't. Yeah, I'm not sure on that one.
Got to the end of its journey, whatever that yeah. journey was. I guess the other question marks are on the manager as well. You mentioned seeing that fight in the club that you wanted to see. Yeah. The manager has to get some credit for that. Are they going to go for him, do you think? Or do you think they'll maybe just end up going for someone a bit sexier?
I think after Sunday, it's changed a bit of perception. And if they can, again, you know, might go to Anfield and get hammered on the last day. But, you know, if they play like that and put that F in, I think they might really look at giving him the job properly. He's very well liked in the club and by Gibson on a personal level, and that counts for a lot with Gibson, as we've seen. And, I'd rather someone new and wipe the slate clean, but then you look at the managerial odds on various websites and you just bang your head on the desk and think it's probably worth giving Steve Agnew a go.
I mean,
When Ryan Giggs is the favourite, then, God.
Oh, dear me. Oh. I think it's interesting as well because I think you're probably looking, at, from the outside at least anyway, and from what you've been saying, it's more a case of evolution than revolution when you go down in terms of looking to build a squad to come back up. So,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, with Agnew being an inexperienced manager, it's not like he's going to have to make wholesale changes. He could just add one or two, really. And the rest of them have got the experience of knowing exactly what it takes to get out of that league as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think the likes of Forshaw, Clayton in midfield, and De Roon in the last few weeks has shown how good he can be. So, I mean, he might be one that someone comes in for because you wouldn't really want to play three centre midfielders in the championship. It just seems a real waste of space, really. So we'll. There are smatterings of optimism. I think it's fair to say after Sunday, just to get that back and get the crowd behind. You know, we sold a lot of season tickets. We're getting on for 20,000 already, which is not bad after the grim stuff we've served up for most of the season.
Yeah, not bad at all, and. You know, I guess it's just looking at kind of, you know, other positives maybe, and it's keeping kind of the season going now, really. You don't want it to kind of end. You mentioned that Liverpool game
exactly.
you've got on it, and it's kind of like going into, it does kind of affect how you go into some of the mentality of a football club, really, because as you said, Sunderland, I mean, it's such a stark kind of difference to two teams who've looked like they've been down for a couple of weeks now, and that's probably generous as Sunderland's take, but their kind of reaction to it compared to Middlesbrough is so different, and you just want to keep that going, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Southampton game at home is a big one from that point of view, you know, to go away with a home win. And just to edge to that 30 points, something feels less humiliating if you get into the 30 mark. The 20 always groups you in with those awful sides down the years. I feel like that. And so that's, you have these little targets, and I think if we could get a win and be on 30 points, then it's something, and it's not been a total humiliation, and they'll have learned. And Steve Agnew was dead nice when we got autographs after the match on Sunday, so that's probably why I'm swaying entirely in his direction.
he's a good guy, give him a chance.
Was he your dad or your daughter after the autographs? That's what I want to know.
She sort of comes with me, and then I'm giving over the piece of paper and going, George, when you sign that, and I look around, she's nowhere near me, and everyone else is about 9 years old. It's humiliating and yet brilliant. And they do smell amazing, the Borough players, honestly. They've got that right this season.
Oh, well, that's another positive.
I was going to ask you what's been your favourite moment of being in the Premier League this season, but I think we just had it, didn't we?
We did. Did just finally getting to meet George Friend and give him a bit of a sniff. That was a real highlight for me. There was a lass the other day who begged George Friend, she was about 20, and she begged George Friend for a kiss, and then she went, "I think I'm pregnant." Brilliant.
Oh dear, you got to be careful with that. He'll never come back. Yeah. So I mean, it's something we've talked about in the past, Dan, and it's important to kind of, you know, reiterated, this is obviously a Premier League show, but it's not the beginning of every an end of everything. You know, there's fun to be had in the Championship, isn't there? And there's, you know, there's as you say, 20,000 season ticket holders there who want to go and watch Middlesbrough next season, and no matter whoever they're playing, I will be determined to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely right. And then just that, even if we end up in a sort of playoff race, the idea of winning more than you lose is attractive at whatever level it is. There are things I'll miss. I mean, for the first few months, I just loved being on Match of the Day, for instance. That's such a thing I've missed, is the half 10, well, sitting down to half 11 in our case. But then again, in the last few weeks, I just can't face Match of the Day usually, so that's been taken away. So there are, and you know, the big away followings that everyone like Liverpool onwards bring to the ground has really made a difference to the atmosphere, and so I miss that in the Championship. Not many teams bring many fans, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, things to look forward to. You're more optimistic than I thought you'd be there, Dan. So that was
They were good on Sunday. So all I ask for, and for them to smell nice, and that's fine.
Work hard and smell good. I mean, that's a mantra for anyone, isn't it?
That's my life motto, yeah.
I'm about 30% there on both, I feel. Alright, huge thanks to Dan. Get on to his book, 3 PM Saturday. It's absolutely fantastic. And thanks to Dan, and now we'll be going to Burnley. They're even more optimistic. And now we've got Tyrone Marshall from the Lancashire Telegraph, who's joining us now to talk about Burnley. And Tyrone, they finally won away.
Yeah, they did. It's been a long time coming. 18th attempt this season in the league alone. It's been a pretty hard slog for the fans following them away from home this season. And there's been some pretty disappointing defeats and pretty disappointing days there. But it was worth the wait in the end. It was a well-timed win. I think that's almost certainly the win that's going to see them safe. And it was a very good performance, actually.
Yeah, you say well-timed win. And I think that's how it felt to me, and that's why I wanted to get you on to talk about it, because you say it ensures them safe. I don't think anyone really kind of outside of Burnley was worried about Burnley, but I think just getting that away win before the end of the season is really important for next year. I don't think Burnley fans and Burnley squad wouldn't have wanted to go into next season, you know, thinking, well, you know, with that monkey on their back, really. And I think there's lots of things to look forward to for Burnley next year in the Premier League, and I think they can be looking up rather than down. You know, I'm sure the target will still be 40 points and all that, but they could be looking, I think, to kind of kick on. But without that away win, that would have been a big doubt in the back of their mind, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It does, you know, it's a weight off their shoulders for next season. The last thing you want is going into next season and, you know, the first away game of next season is 20 without a win, and it's 21, 22, and it just becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger story as it goes along. So, you know, it allows them to start next season away from home, just on a level footing, really. There's going to be no noise of the away record. There's going to be no real talk about it. It will all sort of be forgotten, and it's done and dusted. So it was massive to get it off the back at the end of the season. I mean, the manager and the players had all been saying this year that, you know, it just needed points on them, but it doesn't matter if they're home or away. That was the sort of the line they were giving, but you speak to some of them after Saturday, and you know they did not want to go through a season without winning away from home. Even if you end up staying up, great achievement and everything, but you don't really want that. You know, you don't want that hanging over. You don't want that on your records. You don't want it on your CV. So get it. I think is massive for this season, and it's going to have a huge impact at the start of next season as well.
And I think it's fair to say it's been coming, and I thought I've watched Burnley a little bit away, and I haven't seen any major problems. I haven't thought, oh, they're getting this so wrong. You know, you're not like ridiculously open as a team. You know, it's not a case of, you know, maybe it was just a bit of confidence, and it was starting to play on the players' mind a little bit of luck. I don't know, but you know, as I say, from what I've seen Burnley away from home, at least recently, you know, they've looked like the win was in them.
Yeah, they certainly have improved. I mean, at the start of the season, away from home, they were pretty poor, to be honest. They had some big defeats and fairly sort of poor performances early on. But since sort of December time, they have improved a lot away from home without sort of quite getting over the line. And I mean, it's not really a squad that lacks belief, but it seemed to me with a little bit of just sort of almost not knowing how to win those tight games that they're in away from home, because there was a lot of them, you know, games that Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, Tottenham, where they lost 2-1 and were in those games. 2-0 at Sunderland, 2-0 at Middlesbrough. Those are two games you think they could win. And they're exactly the type of games at home that they have won. The games that have been really tight and they just find a way to get over the line, probably because they've done it so often in the last couple of years. Whereas away from home, they didn't seem to have that sort of same little bit of belief that somehow they'd find a way to get it done. So I think this one would kind of add to that, and it might sort of start off a few more coming in now.
It's interesting as well, you talk about playing the way that they did at home, and I think that's exactly what it was. It was an archetypal classic Burnley performance, as in you had to soak up a lot of pressure a lot of the time. You managed to get the goal early, held out, and then killed the game late on. It's interesting how you said that they spent so much time trying to find a formula away from home, when in reality they should just kept doing what they were doing beforehand.
Yeah, that's kind of what they turned to around December time, really. I mean, before this season, it was very unusual for Sean Dyche to go away from the 4-4-2. That is his formation. He's a huge fan of it. That's what he thinks gives his teams the best chance of winning games. And at the start of this season, they did sort of try out a bit of a 4-4-1-1, 4-2-3-1, however they sort of lined it up. And, you know, it, away from home especially, it didn't work for them, bizarrely. It almost worked better for them at home. But since sort of December, they've gone back to this 4-4-2, and I think Dyche has just decided to stick with the principles he knows and the way he wants his team to play. And since they've done that, the 4-4-2 has worked for them, and it was a kind of back-to-basics display on Saturday.
I think that Burnley have got two up front working better than most teams in the Premier League, because if you look at the three options they've got Andre Gray, who's got power and strength, but also got the pace as well. Then you've got your classic target man in Sam Vokes. And then one of my favourite players, my all-time second favourite player called Barnes, ever to play in the Premier League, Ashley Barnes. And it was just an absolute classic of the Barnes genre. His goal, it was everything. Sometimes players score a goal that encapsulates everything that makes them a good player or makes them as a player, and that was it. It was the speed of movement to get in there, the complete miss kick that threw off the whole defence, and then the cool finish at the end. It was just wonderful.
Yeah, he's a very sort of probably old-fashioned centre forward is the best way of saying it, really, without trying to do him a disservice there. He's you know, he can be all sort of arms and legs at times in challenges, and in he roughs up defenders, and I don't think defenders relish playing him, but he's a very sort of clever player as well, and he kind of buys into how Dyche wants his 4-4-2 to operate, and he's a pretty sort of key man in getting that front two working. I think there was a few eyebrows raised on Saturday when it was Barnes and Vokes up front.
Yeah.
Kind of, you see those two on the team sheet and you think it's going to be direct and pretty sort of uncompromising stuff. But it did work, and they linked up really, really well on Saturday.
Yeah, I noticed there, I read your Telegraph article on the piece, Tyrone, and I noticed you said there was a little bit of criticism on social media before the team, but, you know, people, you know, I'll have to say you got it right afterwards. I guess that's what happens when you drop your top scorer, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is to be expected. I'm sure the manager probably expected it. I mean, it was interesting. I felt it was a bit sort of back to basics in there. You know, you've got Bobby Brady coming in for $13 million in January. He was on the bench, and it was Scott Arfield in the team who's sort of one of the old guard, been there for 4 years, came on a free from Huddersfield, and normally you wouldn't think he'd get anywhere near Brady's place, but he sort of knows more. You know, he's sort of embedded in the sort of Dyche ways, if you like, and what's expected of a wide man in his 4-4-2. So it was, you know, he was in for, and Gray was on the bench for the two sort of bigger, more physical to forward, so it was a very typical sort of Burnley display in that sense. But when you've got, you know, you spend $13 million on a winger, you expect him to be in the team perhaps. And I think the fans sort of Brady on the bench, saw Gray on the bench before on the bench as usual. And, you know, on social media there was a bit sort of like, oh, I'm not too sure about this, you know. But yeah, the manager, I think he had the last laugh with that one.
He's in a very strong position, both within the fan base and within the squad themselves, to be able to make strong and maybe unpopular decisions, and people will go with him. I mean, personally, I think you might have seen that Palace was down to their fourth and fifth choice centre-backs and thought he's got to put Vokes up against them and maybe leave the pace of Gray to stretch them later on in the game. But obviously, like you say, when you see top scorer, it's a lot tougher to make those decisions. But I think, again, that goes credit to Burnley for sticking with Dyche and allowing him to build a philosophy rather than just a team. And that means that when you've got to make tough decisions, that everyone can buy into it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he has certainly built up a large sort of portion of respect for the fan base and the players with what he's achieved at the club over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, his achievements are incredible. So, you know, no one's going to really question him. He's got a lot of power at the club, and rightly so, sort of, from what he's done. And like you say, when he picks a team, the, you know, players are disappointed to be on the bench, but they all sort of speak of this sort of togetherness and the fact that it's a squad game, and they know that all 18 are required. And, you know, it's huge for football and platitudes, but it does seem to be the case there. And it was interesting on Saturday that probably perhaps the two best players were players who hadn't started for, well, Ashley Westwood hadn't started for 2 months, yet came in and was excellent. And James Tarkowski started at centre-half, his first league start of the season, and he was excellent. And it does seem that everyone's ready to go. And you look at Gray coming off the bench to get the second goal. It feels that even if you're on the bench, you know you're going to have some kind of role to play at some point, and that's going to be your chance.
Okay, I just want to finish up by asking you about Joey Barton, if you don't mind, Tyrone, because he's obviously somebody who divides opinion quite a lot throughout the football world, throughout the country. He gets this ban not at an ideal time for Burnley, really. I'm just interested in what the perception of him is in Burnley, because he's had a couple of spells there. He obviously got off to a bit of a strange start, you know, when found out to be criticising the club before he joined. And generally speaking, within the football club and within the fan base, I know it's not going to be his one voice, but the general perception of him and kind of what's happened in this instance?
I think, you know, in terms of what's happened in this instance, I think everyone sort of accepts he's broken the rules, and, you know, he said it's harsh, the club say it's harsh. I'm not so sure. I think, you know, it's probably, you know, when you look at the sheer number of offences and things, it's probably not as bad, but generally speaking, he's been, you know, incredible around this club. And I think everyone from kitchen staff to players, you know, is in the dressing room, the management have only got good words to say about him. Like I say, it's been a sort of bizarre story, really, and that he came in having, I mean, slagged off that bus parade when they finished second a couple of years ago, and there was a few sort of question marks of, oh God, why are we signing him? But he was fantastic last season, and again, since he's come in this season, he's been superb. And I think someone like my management has played a large role in that, to be honest. But Barton really seems to have bought into sort of the ethos around the club and how everyone works. And, you know, people have only got good word to say about him, and the fans have taken to him. They've soon forgotten those sort of tweets about the bus parade and things like that. They've really taken him, embraced him, voted him as Player of the Year last year. And, you know, I think they're hugely disappointed that it is, you know, almost certainly now going to be the end of his time at the club.
Yeah, and possibly the end of his career as well. Okay, huge thanks to Tyrone. You can check out all his stuff on Burnley at the Lancashire Telegraph. But now we're going to go over and hear about what's going on at Manchester United. And now we've got Steve Armstrong from United We Stand fanzine, and I guess that's what we should start with, Steve, the positives in that you had a new fanzine on sale, and as usual, it looks the absolute business. I don't know what it reads but you know, it's that cover's beautiful.
Yeah, that was the worst ever attempt at, can you send me a free mag through the post?
I want to read that Paul Ince interview, mate, you know what I mean? See if he slags us off.
To be fair, he was obviously very topical that we did it, and he didn't hold back. I mean, he gave Andy a ton of material, obviously, which we're going to spread over two mags, but obviously it's a rarity about, you know, getting, you know, it's very rare you can actually get to somebody who's played in the Premier League era for both clubs. So there's a lot of good stuff about how he came to leave United, how his Milan move came about, how the Liverpool sign came about. He's pretty complimentary about Liverpool supporters. So, yeah, it's a good read. So
don't sound so disappointed. You
know, well, it's an interesting one, actually, because I actually loved him and rated him as a player quite highly. So, again, you know, I didn't mind any of that stuff. You know, I'd have to go over old ground about my view on United and the sort of cities and people and places. And, you know, I don't class myself as being clouded by football where that's concerned. So I wasn't overly fussed about that when it happened anyway. And sometimes, and I think he said it in his interview, do you know what? If you've just scored a goal for a team that you're playing for, then you should go nuts. And that's the end of the matter. And particularly, I know we've talked quite topically in the last sort of 6 to 12 months about all this nonsense of people who score goals against and try and almost be too respectful about it. You know, it's got no place. And, you know, Danny Welbeck went up in my estimations. Not that he could have gone any lower, but he went up in my estimations when he scored that goal against United in the FA Cup and went nuts in front of the Stretford End, because that's what you want to see in it. But it's a good interview. There's actually some quite provocative stuff in there, actually. We've managed to bury a piece about Martin McGuinness being a United fan in behind Paul Lynch. So, that was quite an opening exercise as well. But, you know, we've had quite a lot of feedback about a number of the pieces in there. But, you know, fanzines are about right and wrong. They're about opinion. And I thought the last, the content of them was fantastic. And, you know, we've been quite, obviously, we've got Rooney on the cover, which... suggests that we think it might be the last time we get the chance to do that for one of United's greatest ever players. So, yes, there will be one in the post.
fantastic to hear. I don't know why you thought I might want to read it. You know, something's come up. Rooney gets his goal at the weekend, but it's a disappointing one. I saw your tweets after when you just said it can't be any surprise how tired they look. You know, it's a threadbare squad you're down to at the moment. It's lads being asked to play a lot of football, and it's just inevitable it's going to take it out of them.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm done with this season, so God knows what M lot must be like as players. I'm completely out of and I'm just absolutely going, I wish it had just end. So I think, listen, we can all get on our IOSs about the Premier League footballers earning this, that, and the other, and they're athletes now, and they should look after themselves. But when you do too much of anything, I'm afraid it catches up on you, whether it's your own job or athletics or, you know, whatever else, anything that involves sport. It's weird, and just the circumstances surrounding why, you know, it's not a surprise to me that United's squad is now falling apart injury-wise as the tiredness sets in. And, you know, I just think it's just one of them things, really. And the facts of the matter are quite simple. I'm watching every game in the flesh for a long, long time now, probably since we managed to get away with it away at Middlesbrough, although we were definitely hanging on until Van Valdez did probably his best ever thing at Manchester United, even though he's played for his pilot and through his legs. But, you know, we were out on our feet then, and, you know, there's a lot of players, a lot of aged players now playing a lot of football that perhaps wasn't on the radar. So it's already well saying, well, I think that was United's 30th home game of the season, you know, which is frightening when you think about it. And it's already well saying, well, you know, other clubs have played 55, 56, 60 games. I think the concept of if you've played 60 games and you're playing against a team who's played 35 to 40 games, that's a different ball game altogether. It's not as level physically. And we can wax lyrical about the rights and wrongs of it all we like. The reality is that United are absolutely out on their feet, and they're not getting through games. Anything like United, if United had been 3 up at half time in that game, I wouldn't have been confident that we'd have won gone, because they just didn't look physically well enough to do that. And, you know, it takes its toll. You know, you chuck in there the travel with European games. We had a long run to the final in the League Cup, quarter finals, the FA Cup, and then obviously got the challenge that the Europa League brings you. And I think, again, you know, we know that that's going to be there, but I do think it's a little bit naughty when you're playing a Thursday night game at 8 p.m. and then you're back in at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, they've done that a few times, haven't they? And it just seems a bit unnecessary. And it's something we spoke about on this show before, that, you know, in Spain and in Italy, they'll look after clubs better who are in Europe. And as long as you're doing it for everyone, I don't see what you could be accused of in terms of favouritism. You're just looking after the teams who happen to be in Europe. And, you know, pushing that game to 4, you know, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference to the sanctimony of the Premier League. It just gives United a bit more chance of a rest.
Yeah, it does. And as somebody, you know, it means you don't have to eat pasta at 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
I think, look, it isn't a United moan that. I think the point is it's a generic one and it happens across the board. And I genuinely think that the Premier League, personally, don't actually care two hoops about how English teams do in European tournaments. I think they don't really care. All they're interested about is they've got to be available to play at whatever time we want to showcase them at the weekend. And that's all they genuinely care about. And I think at some point, for the good of the game in this country and for the good of European tournaments, you know, they're going to have to come up with a compromise that where people are being seen to help out. So yeah, but listen, let's not get too carried away with this. A half fit United should have been capable of beating a fully fit Swansea City, who, you know, have been largely one of the poorest teams in the Premier League since it started this season. So, you know, you can't make too many excuses for how we did perform in that game, full stop. You know, it wasn't a good result. And I think as much as you've heard me saying for, you know, pretty much since January now, I've never deviated once from this. Do you go for top four or do you go for Europa League? I've never deviated from, you know, we go for Europa League and try and win a trophy. You know, not win a place, try and win a trophy. And that's what United should have done back then. I actually think we're now potentially paying the price for trying to do the two. Right. Trying to play everybody in all of these games. And as much as Mourinho's taking United forward in a number of areas, I think something he's definitely culpable of for me is playing the wrong side in league games where, I think personally, this is before we've got to this evil running of Spurs away, Arsenal away and Southampton away, of which we'll win potentially one at best. So top four, even when we were a point away from it, was for me was never really, you know, we're 1 point on paper, maybe 5 or 6 points away net in terms of you look at the run-ins to, you know, not just what City you've got, but what Liverpool have got. The other thing you've got to bear in mind is, have United been in the top four in terms of quality of football played throughout the season? We've had flashes where you can say they've been top two, but more often than not, our football has been of a standard where we're fifth or sixth. And funnily enough, that's where we spent pretty much most of the season. So, you know, we've got to throw all our eggs firmly into the Europa League basket now. And I'm less confident. I was actually highly confident of, you know, Celta Vigo was a decent draw. But, you know, Celta Vigo haven't played four out of three games. They're struggling for everything they've got, you know, actually on Thursday night. And that's going to be tough for us.
They've played well. I've watched a lot of Spanish league this season. I've seen them impressing a few times. One thing I wanted to ask you, Steve, you talk about obviously the injury situation, certain amounts of that can't really be helped. But how do you feel Mourinho's handled it? I'm not just talking about the whole Luke Shaw and Smalling and Jones business, but just in general, because one thing I've noticed is that in his most successful sides, he has a very settled team, a very settled first 11. Whereas obviously through injuries and the vagaries of the squad, he's not really been able to do that. Now, do you think that going away from his normal formula has affected him badly?
Listen, I don't think it's affected him badly in the sense of I think he's frustrated. But then, you know, when you want to be first, second, you know, and you find yourself fifth, I think you're going to be frustrated. But I think he's conducted himself well. I think, you know, we can criticise him for the one thing that's gone right under the radar that everybody uses, slagged off this year. I don't know if you've noticed, but he's always played them in the very next game, which, you know, and usually they've gone on and played all right as a point of saying, you know, I'll prove to you that I'm not this, that and the other. And I'm quite confident that he's been putting his foot through Jones and Smalling for similar things, so that when they do come out, they're going to play blinders, because he probably thinks, I'm going to need these lot. So I think he's been smart. I think it's different. You know, it's called management tactics. It's called, you know, brilliant man management when somebody English or Scottish does it. It's called disrespectful and, you know, showing frailties when a foreign manager does it. So I'm all right with how he's done it, to be honest with you. One thing that the club needed was steel in the management team. And the manager who was going to say, listen, regardless of what goes on, I'm the boss here and I'm in charge and I'm making these decisions. And, you know, I think that's what you want from a boss more than anything else. But, you know, ultimately, listen, he's not doing, you know, he's still not even got anywhere close to some of the brutal levels that Ferguson reached when he came to players. And players who, A, were far better than some of these guys, and B, probably less deserving of some of the grief that he used to ship out. So I'm all right with it in a minute. And listen, Mourinho, for largely putting a better standard of football back in at United, and for acting like a manager, and also for the fact that we're certainly, albeit, you know, going down the odd cul-de-sac every now and then, we're definitely on the road to better things, and the support very, very much is behind the, he's the manager and what he says goes. And, you know, after three seasons of what you class as weak management, is still a breath of fresh air to us.
Yeah, it's strange to see a Manchester United manager of recent times taking a team down this season. It's kind of, you know, very, it seems a more and more kind of bizarre decision than that happened in the first place.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Okay, so what would you say would kind of be a good season now, looking from now to the end of the year? You know, if they do win the Europa League, which is, as you say, is getting tougher to decide how they look, is that got to be down as a good season, or standards of Manchester United just too high for that to be judged to be the case?
Disagree completely. Listen, you set out to win silverware, and success is about, you know, football's about moments for me, and, you know, I'm getting sick and tired of listening to journalists waxing on about how United aren't that at all. At the start of every season, everybody's on a level playing field, and it's up to you to outdo. You know, it's a bit like saying, you know, to this day, Liverpool are still, along with United, the most successful club in this country by a country mile. But, you know, I don't think Liverpool have expectations that we're going to win titles, or they just wanted to be in the mix. And I think United fans have been realistic about it on that score. So, you know, success is always a trophy, but football as a support is about moments, and it's about days out, like the League Cup final, and scored in late on to win a trophy against Southampton. It's about, you know, trips to there and everywhere. And, you know, we've got European semi-final of the only cup that we've never, ever won in our history. It's coming up on Thursday night. And, you know, that might not be, you know, what was at the top of the Christmas wish list, but, you know, we've got some presents on there already that are all right. You know, we're not going to be taking either of them back to the shops in January. So, you know, we're happy with them. And hopefully you'll get the best out of, you know, some of the players that that perhaps haven't hit the heights that have been expected. You'd expect a better second season from Mkhitaryan. You'd certainly expect Ola Pogba's done all right. But there is an element of adaptation that's needed in the Premier League. And Luis Suarez was a classic example of that. He scored something like 80 goals in 110 games in his last four seasons in the Dutch league. Comes to that, I think he scored something like 14 in his first 50 for Liverpool. And you look what he went on to become after the season and a half. You'd expect the likes of Pogba and Mkhitaryan to kick on. So, you know, there's a framework there. He's obviously going to make some decisions about some of the ageing players like Rooney. You know, I think he's finished now, as much as I'm his biggest fan at United. And then there's just the quality. There's a level of player there whose heart might be in the right place, but they're just not good enough. So he's got that to deal with. But you get the sense that ultimately the manager knows what he's doing. The manager's in charge of the club. You know, we've got a trophy on the board already. We've got the potential of a European final, and a winnable European final, because ultimately we're not going to be facing Seville. and, you know, there's a lot to look forward to. And as I reminded somebody the other day, you know, the alternative to this could be that we're still in the fourth season of David Moyes' fucking 6-year contract. So how could you moan about
everything seems sunny in the face of that? How could you moan? Okay, huge thanks to Steve Chong from United We Stand, and to all of the guests this week, and of course to Mo, and that has been 50.